WAMC crew, hey, everybody, as a community, as a family, just made $1 million. What are you going to do next?
Do a show?
Yeah. Screw Disneyland. Let's do a show.
Yeah.
Good morning. Welcome, everybody, to... you would like your headphones higher,
yeah.
Alan?
Yeah.
I was giving. Oh, that's good. That's
yeah,
very good.
There you
very
go.
Good. I'm not as quite as hearing impaired as the rest of you are.
I know. Yeah.
We're as smoothly professional as we are during the fun drive, aren't we? It's amazing.
It's pretty good. Are you all right there, Ira?
Let me try this one.
It'll be better for you.
Okay, and right. Well, there's another set that might work. Are you all set?
No, just go ahead. I don't want to make a fuss here.
Okay.
I am Ira Fussfeld.
Hey. This one may be better, Ira.
He's got fuss right in his name.
Well, that's all the time we have. Goodbye, everybody.
Thank you very much. Please tip your waitress. Have a lovely evening and good night. welcome to the show. As you can tell, it's a post-fun drive, and what you probably can tell is that, oddly enough, we've had 2.5 weeks to prepare for this particular show, and this is how good we're doing.
So far, so good.
Sounds good.
Good morning. Yes, indeed. Welcome to our panel. We should note that both Alan and Ira Fussfeld, who joins us, just got off the media project, so they are here, and we're thrilled. And
I'm taking the position, Joe. As you know, I used to be on the round table quite often. And then when my position at the newspaper changed, I wasn't on as often.
Yeah.
And I haven't been on for a long time. So I'm taking the position that I'm back by popular demand.
Didn't
it actually work? I'll tell you the whole story.
Oh, boy.
It's the morning after the fun drive. We thought we might still be here. We really didn't have a full panel, and you were in the building.
I still think my story is better. I'm going with it.
That's very nice, Alan. That's very sweet.
It really makes very welcoming.
That's very sweet.
But
and,
true.
But you know, the other great thing about this is that Ira, when he was on, it was Thursday, and we used to call it Ira Day. Yeah. So this seems like a good old-fashioned Ira Day.
It's a reunion, I tell you.
So we sing the class song?
That's right. Well,
dear
we're thrilled
Joan
that
of
you
Arc.
Could be here. Ira Fussfeld, of course, is a regular on the Media Project, publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman, and a thrill to have you with us, and thank you, and welcome back. Of course, Ray Graff and Alan Chartok. Before we get into the news of the day, though, I think we all want to collectively thank the audience for an incredible 10-day fun drive where $1 million was raised, and I think, you know, well, feeling pretty good this morning.
And there were so many people. You know, the staff was great. You were great. Ray was great. But I have to tell you, Pete Seeger giving us a concert as a result of his generosity. And there were just some of the people at Tanglewood and SPAC. I mean, it's become such a community effort. So many people put so much in. All those restaurants that fed the volunteers all week long and the rest. It's unbelievable.
It really is unbelievable, and everything came together, and it was just a lovely, nice drive, and pleasant.
Very little unpleasantness. I was telling the guys that there was one call. Guy said he liked the media project because Ira and Rex beat me up a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he bounced back today.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. And that wasn't the call I was thinking of. No, there was another call he got. But why rehash all that?
Sure.
But
why don't you?
Let us go. let us go to the news. Of course, when you've been off for a week and a half, a lot can happen. A lot happens in the world. And the big story I think we want to talk about, which is still an ongoing story, it's a huge story. The director of the National Security Agency told Congress yesterday that dozens of terrorism threats had been halted by the agency's huge database of the logs of nearly every domestic phone call made by Americans, while a senator briefed on the program disclosed that the telephone records are destroyed after 5 years. What do you make of the breaking of the story, Alan, of this coming out at the time of the whistleblower and the people who of the timing of this?
Well, this is a very interesting story because the fact that the government is doing this, you know, let's just call it tapping or sourcing or whatever you want to call it, is in itself not known by a lot of people. Now, if you're a terrorist and you don't know, you might do something that you would not do if some newspaper reporter told you. That's on the one side. That's what the conservatives in this argument are going to make, guys like Peter King from Long Island. But on the other hand, you know, if the press isn't diligent, if it doesn't exercise its First Amendment rights, if it doesn't report on things, we may just lose our civil liberties without firing a shot.
The thing I found interesting about this story, and I'm curious as to your thoughts, Ira, because we knew a lot of this, right? I mean, we knew a lot of this was going on, and I guess it was just sort of some details that emerged that well, kind of raised the hackles.
Everybody in the Congress supposedly knew, House and Senate. You haven't seen, I don't believe, any partisan complaining about this because they all knew about it and they all signed on to it. So, and I think that my position is that the average person in this country who uses a smartphone and who goes on the internet, and if they don't understand that their lives are wide open, that they're an open book, they have been living in a fantasy world.
Yeah.
So, you know, but what I'm comfortable talking about is the press, and I think that the reporter in this case came upon information that's important information for the people of this country to know about. The reporter had apparently information beyond what he's reported that he decided should not be reported because it really would jeopardize security. And this information is now out there for the citizens of this country to know about. Do we want our government doing this? The polling shows right now that by a slight margin, the majority of the people don't mind that their phone call list is
that's
being,
because
is
they're
being
saying reported. If I haven't done anything wrong,
right.
You know,
it's
nobody's doing it.
That they don't mind or they understand why it's being
either.
Done,
or
yeah,
they don't I even think. Understand it, or they don't even care about it. You know, I want to just get on Ira's case a little bit here.
Good.
You know,
the problem hey. With doing this right after doing the media is he's doing this now for the second time.
No, so, that's good. That's good. But Ray and I, for Ray and I, it's like dinner theater.
Oh yeah, this is great. This is great.
Ray, have a V8.
Fair enough.
That's an in joke.
Right.
Okay, and a shot. Okay, so I just think that what happens is there. It is true, you know, this business about everybody should know that your phones are, and terrorists already know that you. But you know, we have, as I have said before, a lot of idiots who want to do damage to this country, and they're stupid. They don't know anything. You know, they put a bomb in their shoe or they're gonna do something dumb. They don't know that their phones are being tapped. And it's very important, or either tapped or they don't know that there's data mining out there. But when they read it in the paper, I'm just giving you the devil's advocate side here because I don't truly believe it. But the moment that they read it in the paper, they will know that they should shut up on the telephone.
The fact is that after this information has been reported and is being discussed here and elsewhere as vigorously as it is being discussed, the government and the people will come to a collective decision, I think. Decision may not be the right word, that this is something that the country is willing to put up with, that this is a freedom that we're willing to see eroded.
So does it help when the director of the National Security Agency tells Congress, as he did yesterday,
yep.
that dozens of terrorism threats were halted as a result of this action?
I think it helps the government's cause if the public is inclined to believe the government.
And do you think they are?
No.
I think they are.
Yeah?
I think they are.
You're talking about this administration, perhaps.
No, I'm talking about if there'll always be people who don't like the government. But I think if you have the head of the major security agency standing there and saying, we can brief the Congress on this. We can show you how many people have been, how many times we have saved lives in this country, smoking bus, smoking gun, you know, all the rest of it. I think people are going to say, good, save me.
The government's default position is this is a secret and it's going to harm us.
Yeah.
That's their default position.
Well, that's what the problem of a democracy is. On the one hand, you have a First Amendment. It's terribly important. It's critical. You always have government people who try to take that away or mitigate it or the rest of it. And even when you have a Barack Obama White House, you see this thing being played out.
So let me ask a naive question, which is, so you have Keith Alexander up before Congress and saying, look, we're not trying to hide it. We're trying to protect America. And as Ira said, you know, we know that this is being done. So if you are a terrorist, doesn't that then change the way that you're doing because you know what they are doing.
Sure.
That's what we were talking about.
Yeah, and so that's right. Let's start from your premise and say it's correct, so that the terrorists are going to find other ways to plot. Well, the government supposedly is working in all over the place to try to prevent this. This phone business is just one piece of it.
Well, you know, what's going to happen, as I said earlier today, is that there's going to be a terrible thing that happens in this country, inevitably. And the people in the security agency are going to say, see, we could have stopped this, except that we were compromised by all of these.
And the public will have to decide whether that's true or whether it's whether the press is being vilified wrongly and that there are other factors involved.
The public hates the press. You know that.
Well, yeah. And I mean, we've had this discussion a million times on the show. But, you know, who do they hate worse? You know,
who do they hate worse? The government or the press?
The government or the press.
If the government says, I'm afraid that if the government says again and again and again that they are protecting people and that they're stopping planes from blowing up, they're stopping people in Times Square from blowing up, they're stopping this and that, that people are going to be more inclined.
Listen, we're a vulnerable nation. The sore is, it's still an open wound from 9/11. We're all afraid of something like that happening again, and naturally that is where a position that the public is going to take is do anything that you can, government, to protect us. And at some point in time, and we may already be there, maybe we haven't, the public is going to say, wait a minute, the government has gone too far and we're losing too many of our freedoms.
It's true. And also there's this ancillary question of who do you tell about what's going on? So you get some guy
What's the next step? Yeah,
well, also you get this guy way down in the government who never should have had security clearance.
Well, that's a whole other issue. Yeah. Where's the outrage about that? Yeah. It's one thing that this guy, Snowden, released this information. How does this guy have this information that's so damaging to our company?
By the way, the head of the NSA, I believe it's the same testimony, said yesterday that was wrong. We have to look into that. That was terribly wrong.
It's because the older people don't know, and they give it to these kids, and then that's what happens. And
he was a subcontractor.
Right? Am I right, though? I mean, that's basically what happens. It's just like, you know, it filters down. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back, and we'll talk about this issue some more, and then we'll move on to many other issues after an NPR news break. You're listening to our roundtable panel on WAMC.
Support for WAMC comes from Beacon Institute for Rivers and Estuaries of Clarkson University, offering a Clarkson Master's in Engineering Management for working professionals. Hybrid online program starts September in Beacon and now in Burlington, Vermont, BIRE.org/engineering. And Davidson Brothers Brew Pub, featuring food, ales, entertainment, and more, serving lunch and dinner 7 days a week in downtown Glens Falls, New York, DavidsonBrothers.com.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Alan Chartok is here, Ray Graff is here, and publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman is here, Ira Fussfeld. Good morning, all, and we welcome your thoughts as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'd love to hear from you. 1-800.
Okay, but wait, how do you do it if you want to check in on that conversation?
Roundtable at WAMC.org.
That's all.
Yeah, you just email us and then we'll read the emails.
We'll read the email.
I have it right here in front of me on my magic screen.
Okay, great.
Like Winky Dink and you.
Who's that?
I remember Winky Dink.
Yeah, thank you very much, Ira.
I can't believe you remember Winky Dink.
Jack Barry, who is, of course, known for
fixing game
shows and for Joker's Wild, had this show, and you put a piece of plastic on your TV set.
On your TV set,
and then he would say, "Let's get Winky home." And then you would take the crayon and you would draw a path and then.
But how could
you
remember that? They were talking about the early 50s. You're not that old.
I had old parents.
Man, and that was, when you think about it, that was the first interactive television.
Absolutely, that was like the first reality show. Yeah. The reason that it went off the air is because kids weren't putting the plastic screen on the TV and they were just like taking the crayon.
Kind of like my house right now.
And parents were getting a little peeved and the show went off the air.
No throwing shoes at the television.
Anyway, let us talk real quick. I just want to get on. So we have like 3 minutes before we have to go over to a news break. And one of the things that was just mentioned before we went to break is that in the testimony, General Alexander, Alan made mention of this, said that he had grave concerns about how Mr. Snowden had access to such a wide range of top secret information, from the details of this program called PRISM to speed the government's search of internet materials to a presidential document on cyber strategy. He said the entire intelligence community was looking at the security of its networks, something other government officials vowed to do after the WikiLeaks disclosures 3 years ago. And that was what kind of sparked the question in my mind, which was, you know, didn't we learn anything from WikiLeaks and what happened 3 years ago?
Well, there are those of us who think that some terrible things came out of WikiLeaks, but then there are also those of us who think that we learned a lot of information out of that, which was very healthy that the American people knew. And so, you know, on the one hand, you have operatives out there and you don't want to endanger them and the rest of it. But we also put these billions and billions of dollars into all of this stuff. We're not sure that it's productive for the American people or for our security or our freedom.
And therein is where we are right now.
Yeah.
The same WikiLeaks is, what, 3 years ago?
Yep.
This Snowden is 2 weeks ago. The Pentagon Papers was a generation ago. And on and on and on.
But
we'll learn from these things. We may not learn what we want to know.
You see, but the problem is that the Pentagon Papers, in my mind, was a good thing. I mean, we needed to know that information. There are some things we don't need to know. And how do you do that balancing?
In your mind, and in hindsight, I think most minds, the Pentagon Papers was a good thing. The current controversy is too fresh to know if it's going to be a good thing. But what is a good thing, in my view, is that this information is out there. This is a society that is supposed to digest this information.
Okay, you'll know this, and it's transparent.
Yeah. And I hate to say it, but I agree with Ira.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, let it be noted.
The record show, yes.
We're going to take a quick break. We're going to go over to NPR News. We will be back and talk about many more subjects, including Hillary Clinton's arrival on Twitter and much more.
Whoa.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Welcome back to the Roundtable's panel, and we welcome you to the proceedings. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here, WAMC's newsman Ray Graff is here, and publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman, Ira Fussfeld, joins us as well. And we thank you all again for all you did during the fun drive. It's great to be back on the air, and we didn't know yesterday if we were going to have a show, and we have a show, and that's great. And here we are.
Sounds like Judy Garland and Mickey Rooney.
Let's have a show.
I was just going to think, I was telling Roselle the other day that on 96th Street, there's a kid named Bugsy. And Bugsy,
I bet there is.
Bugsy, who was fairly dangerous, would say, I'm going to the show this week. And the show meant the movies.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And what did he have at the show?
Pop.
A pop. He had a pop.
He had a pop.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's a soda.
Oh, I thought it was his
date. He popped the cup. Nice. That's a totally different direction.
And I'm so old that I remember when we went to the movies on Saturday mornings, there was always a matron in the children's section.
Absolutely,
a matron,
yes.
Who had a flashlight and took no nonsense. Brooke, no nonsense.
My friend's father was a projectionist at a theater in Brooklyn, and every so often on a Saturday morning, he would take us down to ride the subway from the Bronx, which took forever, and we got there, and the big thrill was not seeing the movies, but was getting in before the theater opened while all the kids were lining upstairs, and the owner of the theater would give us free candy.
Oh,
that's awesome.
That's all you need.
Yeah.
How did we get on this?
I started it, and now I'm really sorry.
The show's over now, so we're all done.
And in probably what is the one of the best transitions I've ever done in radio. So how about this Hillary Clinton Twitter thing, huh?
Boy, she's something in that projection booth.
Those pledges are non-refundable, aren't they?
This is the story from the Washington Post. Hillary Clinton has arrived on Twitter. I have to say the one thing that struck me was Hillary Clinton wasn't on Twitter.
Yeah.
I have to say I
agree with you.
I was sort of stunned by that, but anyway.
Because they all hire some 12-year-old who comes on board and says, okay, this is how to make you even more likable.
So 1,000 a minute, and Hillary Clinton is now has made her debut on social media, and with a biography identifying her as a hair icon.
Yeah.
Pantsuit aficionado, glass ceiling cracker.
Yes.
All right.
I'm sorry. I missed that whole thing. What does that mean?
Well, that you have a biography that would normally, like, for you, it would say, you know, CEO or president of WAMC.
So, in other words, she's making fun of herself?
So, yes. Well, yeah. Likely. Hair icon, pantsuit aficionado, glass ceiling cracker. And then the end of the bio read TBD, to be determined. And so the big question, since, you know, we don't know what her plans are, what her thoughts are.
Yes, we do.
Okay. So this is the
next
step.
She's
going to
run for president.
All right.
Okay.
So Clinton's emergence on social media comes a few days before she's set to deliver a major public address at the Clinton Global Initiative in Chicago, offering her thoughts on domestic policies for the first time since her White House bid in 2008.
I just told you. Yes, we do. We know what she's doing. This is one more piece of proof that she's running for president. She's setting herself up to do that.
What are the pluses? What are the minuses?
Pluses
at this point?
Of what? Of Twitter?
Well, I mean, putting this into motion at this point, and I think, and again, we've talked about this before on this program, but what effect? I mean, there's obviously what she's doing, but there's also the effect that it has on the rest of the party and the rest of the people who are lining up.
Okay, so here's her decision. She's going to be Secretary of State for 4 years. She acquitted herself quite well, no matter how they try to dirty her over Benghazi and the rest of it. Her polls are good. Her numbers are good. If she goes away and recedes into the, you know, to the netherworld, you're never going to hear from her. And then her cachet in terms of public appreciation goes down. So her job is to go around and do these kinds of things that you're talking about. Talk to a prestigious organization, make headlines, maybe even criticize the president a little bit. You know, in terms of
as
what
her husband did yesterday, purportedly.
Yeah, and believe me, those two talk to each other. Mm-hmm. So this is a common strategy, and the name of the game is to get her into the White House. Everything should be seen that way. If you want to take a look at Andrew Cuomo, everything should be seen that way also. I mean, these are the kinds of things that people do when they're developing their political careers, going for the golden ring.
And would we not say, I think we could all agree, even those people who don't like Hillary Clinton, either personally or politically, she and Mr. Clinton are very smart. And whatever they are doing from the moment she walked out as Secretary of State up to and including right now adding on Twitter is very much calculated. They have a game plan, and they're going to roll it out.
Exactly.
You know, the really... poignant piece of this article by Philip Rucker in I guess it was a couple of days ago in the Washington Post. Twitter will afford Clinton, as it does President Obama, an opportunity to shape the news and communicate directly with voters. And then they quote a Republican strategist, Kevin Madden, and he puts it really well. Political figures that use Twitter the best position themselves as managing editors of their own political news cycle.
Sure, who needs a newspaper
extremely
anymore?
Extremely important nowadays.
Sure, that's exactly right. You avoid the guys who think that the only way to do journalism is gotcha, and you present your own thing. And why should you talk to somebody who's out to destroy you? You don't want to do that.
I also think that, you know, to Ira's point about it being calculated, also in that article, of Twitter, her arrival on Twitter, two former aides, Katie Dowd, a former social media advisor at the State Department who works at the White House, and Katie Stanton, a veteran of the Obama campaign's digital team, who later worked for Secretary Clinton at the State Department, and is now at Twitter, helped design this. So it's been in the works for a long time. So it's not like you suddenly wake up one morning and say, oh, I think I'll go on Twitter. It's very calculated.
Still, you have to be very careful all the time. I mean, look at what the sports figures do. They don't have anybody helping them filter this stuff, and there's an endless world of trouble that can be opened.
Well, right, but you don't have I don't think you have the savvy there that you may have here.
No, but on the other hand, Ray's right. You're going to hear from, I mean, the thing about Twitter is something begets something else. There's always a reaction, isn't there? Anthony Weiner a pretty good proof of what can go wrong?
Well, I don't think we're going to see Hillary fall into that trap. I it's funny you mentioned Anthony Weiner.
It's possible.
No, it's not possible.
Good insight, Greg.
But using what we were saying before about everything being calculated, it is interesting to note that Hillary and President Clinton have not supported a wiener in the mayoralty,
even though Hillary's top aide.
Top aide is a wiener's
married
wife.
Too.
So they're seemingly staying away from that. Another check mark on the ledger.
Yeah.
Let's move on and talk about another issue that's in the New York Times this morning. Data revealing a rise in college degrees among Americans. The number of Americans graduating from college has surged in recent years, sending the share with a college degree to a new high, according to federal data. This struck me as interesting because, meanwhile, on the Times Union this week, they reported that just one-third of the students who enroll in the state's community colleges in New York State actually finish with a degree, according to a new study. And I think those are two interesting issues.
Look, it makes me crazy. I think higher education has become the new segregation, to be honest with you. And I think that the people who have the least are most likely, we know this, there's no question about it, to be left behind. And you're telling us about the community colleges right now, Joe, is a perfect example of that. The people who go to I love community colleges, by the way. I think that they're the most important institutions because I think they do help to democratize America. But if there was a story on NPR, I think it was Marketplace or NPR, about people who work in Starbucks and they're supporting their families and they're going to community college at night. And all of a sudden the management says to you, okay, you got to come in and be here. You don't have any choice. You drop out. And that's exactly what you were just telling us about, how many people have dropped out. Meantime, $60,000 for a lot of these colleges to go to a year. Now, who can afford $60,000? And don't give me a lot of garbage out there about, well, we offer a lot of scholarships. You'd have to offer a lot of scholarship to make up for in a prestigious university to go for $60,000.
I think it was on this program not that long ago on one of these panels you were talking about when you went to school,
Hunter College,
yeah,
free.
You went free all the way through, and in the days when one of all of us, but certainly when Al and I were growing up, everything was free through high school, certainly, and that was as much as the community decided that we wanted to give to the people. All they needed was a high school
but
diploma,
but not in New York City.
New York City University. But my point is, what used to be okay being a high school degree, now you need the college degree by and large. Yet to get the college degree, you have to pay thousands and thousands of dollars, more than anybody can afford, most people can afford. And I guess my question/point is, have we now reached a point in this country where we need to be thinking about the same opportunity for everybody, that is free college education, as we used to give people us.
My point exactly. Because everybody, Democrats, Republicans, everybody accepts one phrase, which is equality of opportunity. The minute you don't have the opportunity to get higher education, you don't have equality of opportunity. That's if you're following. You just don't have it.
Okay, I understand that point, and I agree with it. But what I don't understand is, so where does the disconnect come in the sense of one of the opportunities then is a community college? One of the opportunities to make that first step is to go to the community college.
But I tried to tell you before. But I tried to tell you that the people who are going to the community college are the most at risk economically.
Well, in some cases,
therefore they're going to drop out more than the people who are going to Harvard.
Wait a minute.
But the point, I'm sorry. Real quick. But what we're finding about community colleges, and especially during the economic downturn, was that the people, because college is so expensive, that the people who were going to community colleges really weren't the at risk as much as they were the upper middle class in many cases that were using the community colleges, because it was $30,000 as opposed to $60,000.
$30,000. Let me just help you with this. I know that's stupid to say that, but let me just try to say this. $30,000 is too much if you're living in an inner city neighborhood where $500 makes the difference whether you can do this or not.
Absolutely.
We're not talking about $30,000, so that there is this initial cutoff, which brings me back to Ira's point and to my point about it's the new segregation, and what we have to do is make sure that everybody, in the same way they can go to high school, can go to college. Raymond?
Well, my point was several points ago, but my point about community colleges is not everybody, and it says, I think the author of the report that we're talking about here says this. Not everybody who goes to community college intends to get a degree. In other words, you go to improve your situation, maybe where you're already working, or maybe to get a better
good
job.
Good point.
Well, but that's continuing education.
No. Ray's right, because community colleges offer a lot of very specialized, semi-vocational
What's the proper word? Older? I don't know.
I think not a pejorative. I think you're fine.
My resentage.
No. that who have retired and want to say, I want to take a writing class, or I want to take an art class, or I want to take a computer class, or I want to go and do this.
I think Ray's point is right.
I didn't read the TU story. It surprised me. I'm going to curious now. I'm going to go back and read it, but.
As a parting gift.
Thank you very much. It's my understanding that in my community, Ulster County Community College, the demand to get in has never been greater.
That's right. New York's community college enrollment has, over the last decade, far outpaced that of the state's four-year colleges and universities.
Yeah. And part of that, I think, is what we were discussing before, which is students who perhaps can't afford or can't qualify for four-year colleges, recognizing that they need more education, are going to community college. Now, at that point, some of them may be finding that they can't cut it. In other words, there are people who are going to community college who perhaps shouldn't have gone to community college.
Yeah. So, and you're right. And one of the points that's made in the article is that community colleges added 28% more students, which would then indicate that your numbers would then go up of the people who actually don't complete, and you should
all know about a phrase called articulation agreements.
Tell us about that, Alan. Articulate that for us.
Articulation agreements are signed, let's say, in New Paltz and UCC, Ulster Community College.
Sure, they prefer to be called SUNY Ulster, but I still call them UCC.
Okay, yeah. So there are articulation. If you get out, you get into SUNY New Paltz.
Well, they have a very good transfer.
When you
graduate, you can get into a four-year school, which
that's
is another appeal of the community college.
Which is why a lot of people go, as Joe has pointed out, because it's cheaper to go for those first 2 years.
Right.
So let us then turn to the New York Times article on the front page today, which says the number of Americans graduating from college has surged. That surge follows more than two decades of slow growth in college completion, which caused the U.S. to fall behind other countries and led politicians from both parties, including President Obama, to raise alarms. Last year, 33.5% of Americans 25 to 29 had at least a bachelor's degree, compared to 24% in 1995.
But the question always is, and there's people screaming at their radios right now, yes,
oh, good.
A lot of people go to college. What do they know when they come out of college?
Right.
So the better question is, will they get a job? Yeah. In other words, is society ready to handle, okay, great, more college degrees, more people with degrees are coming out. Well, where are the jobs going to be? And I think it gets back to the community colleges where you go, you refine what you need to improve your standing in the labor market. So you come out with a piece of paper. Does it make you marketable? I think that's what we have to find out.
Yes. No, I mean, all of us who have ever taught in a classroom, Joe teaches at St. Rose now. I taught for 40 years or something like that, still teaching. It's amazing. There are some young people who come, take their work very seriously, and are incredibly bright. You really have a lot of respect for them. But there are some who come because their mothers and fathers want them to come, they're sort of shoved into it. You ask them a simple question, they don't have the slightest idea of what's happening, and you
identify them very quickly, don't you?
Yes, yeah. and so that's very troublesome. And we don't say, okay, you don't get through if you just are there for the ride. You do get through, and that's an issue.
And by the way, even community colleges are becoming less affordable.
I just said that.
Other day, the president of Ulster Community College requested of the legislature another tuition hike, and I believe he said it was the sixth or seventh year in a row.
Yeah absolutely. And a lot of that is said to be because of more students, and they need more infrastructure, and they need more.
But as I said, I don't want to repeat myself, but if $500 for some of those kids, even if there's scholarship money available, they don't even know it. $500 will keep a whole bunch of people out of a community college when you raise the tuition.
We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back and tackle our final issue as we wrap up our panel on the roundtable this morning. We'll be right back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Piano Summer at New Paltz, 3 weeks of concerts and institute events. Jonathan Biss and Alexander Korsantia, guest artists Vladimir Feltzman, artistic director, July 6th through 26th, newpaltz.edu/piano. And Little Wolf Architecture, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, providing collaborative discovery and design for dwellings in the regional landscape, featuring passive house and natural home strategies, littlewolfarch.com.
Alan said a moment ago, I know people are screaming at their radios. Well, if you're screaming at your radio and you want to be part of this conversation, you can be part of the conversation. And our producer, Sarah LaDuke, joins us now to tell us exactly how you can become a part of this conversation.
However you want. Goodbye.
Okay.
Just kidding.
Well done.
We have a Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. We have a Twitter account, twitter.com/WAMC Roundtable.
/ Hillary Clinton.
At Roundtable. And probably the most
used,
good,
user-friendly,
easy and user-friendly way is to email us roundtable@wamc.org. If you call, we won't answer. Just kidding, we won't.
Of course, if you email, the government will know that you're doing
right,
that.
Exactly.
That's right. Yeah,
you'll
that,
be in PRISM.
There's that issue. Sarah LaDuke, thank you very much,
huh?
As always, our wonderful
PRISM
producer.
And PRISM, right.
Sarah LaDuke, who's at the front lines of all of those emails, tweets, and Facebook posts. So we will... in other words, she's the one who knows how to use
she
that.
She has
and,
to do it.
Yeah,
too.
And tells us tells us what people say. We have about 5 minutes, and I know I assume that you all talked about this on the media project that's coming up this week that you taped a little bit ago. I thought it was an interesting story. I wanted to talk just a little bit, just for a few moments on this show, and that is the PBS NewsHour, the signature newscast on PBS. First significant round of layoffs in nearly two decades. The reason. Declines in support from corporate sponsors. So I go to Alan Shartok. So after a $1 million fund drive and I think getting a pretty good idea of what the climate is for public broadcasting, what do you make of news like this?
I'll tell you the truth. I'm going to get an awful lot of unhappy people here, but there's a big difference between what we do and what some of the PBS stations are doing. We just saw the Koch brothers, if that's how you pronounce it, as in Koch, Koch, you know, influencing tremendous sway over what would come out on a, and it was a brilliant New Yorker article, as a result of the unwillingness to part with the Koch money. I have to tell you, it sickens me, and I'm very worried about it. I think if the television people, the PBS people, as opposed to the you know, the NPR types, which are in far less trouble, were to adhere to our model of going to citizens and saying it's your dollars and meaning it. It's your dollars which are going to keep this thing going. You'd have all the money you would need. That's what I think.
The thing that troubled me about this article, though, is this is not a story about PBS. This is not a story about one particular station. This is a story about that network's premier news organization.
Without question.
So that's concerning in the sense of, is that where you're tightening the belt?
Well, obviously people have a budget and they have to live within it. Look, the Greeks just kicked off their whole national thing and using the budgetary crisis as the way to do it. But I don't know. I don't know who they ticked off. This is a station. This is an operation that was there from the very beginning when Hitler invaded. It's a terrible thing to say it's all budgetary. I think you can go to people and get the money to support it.
Well, I'd like to think that's the case, but would you not say that they are falling victim to what all of us are falling victim to, your successful fund drive notwithstanding?
What do you mean notwithstanding? That's the whole point.
Well, no, I'm talking about the many places where you can get news and information, and that the PBS NewsHour, a unique program by most standards, is not as unique as it once was. There are many places to go, and perhaps that is just not as viewed, particularly since both McNeil and Lehrer are not on the program anymore.
But the company, McNeil Lehrer Productions, it's a private company, right? Mm-hmm. So this is not in that public broadcasting model, right? In other words, a private company, newspaper, TV station, radio station, When the bottom line is not being met, you trim as best you can.
Well,
correct?
Raymond, first of all, it's almost always about money. So that people start trimming.
But that's exactly it. If it's a private company.
But it's corporate money coming into the public sector.
Don't they say support is coming from, right, even though it's a privately produced program?
But we are going to publicize, and I mean that in the wrong way. In other words, newspapers sooner or later, we're beginning to see it already, are going to say, you want a great newspaper, give us the money to run it. In addition to buying the newspaper, we want this to be a public enterprise like public radio. You're going to see it. I tell you, you will see it.
The few examples that already exist are not doing well.
Yeah, because they're not doing it right.
Well,
there's
see.
A good answer.
And we only have a minute, so I'll just open up this box, which is, part of this is closing offices in Denver and San Francisco. They've long had offices in New York, Chicago, and Los Angeles.
Sure.
So, I mean, the product suffers from that.
Without a doubt. Listen, you find a newspaper publisher in the country who finds sympathy with these guys. I'm not sure it's sympathy is the right word. We're all doing it.
Your
mother used to say, we're all doing it.
Well, so. I'm watching. I'm just watching the program, and the program needs some tweaking, to be perfectly honest with you, because there is an intelligentsia in this country which really loves that program. But the question is, how about getting it so that the format is open to bringing same material, mm-hmm, but telling it in a different way.
We are going to leave it there. My thanks to everyone on the panel, especially Ira Fussfeld, who joined us literally at the last minute, publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman. Ira, happy Ira Day.
Thank you.
Wonderful to have you here. Thank you very much.
You find me on the street, you yank me in.
We'll yank you in again. Thank you very much. Raymond, Alan, thank you very much.
Sure. Thank
Rest
you,
up.
Joe.
The roundtable continues next on WAMC.